the room is quiet enough to hear the reels settle. A soft motor turns. A voice arrives close to the ear. It moves with the slow confidence of a late hour. Demon Lover does not rush. It lets a single sound hang in the air, then another. The space between them does the work. Your eyes search the walls, even though nothing is there. You begin to supply the picture from memory and fear. A door. A pause. A word that lands and does not leave. This is the bargain the episode makes. It trades images for attention. It asks for patience. It rewards focus. Tonight we listen with care, note what it does, and test why it still works on a modern ear used to noise. The tape turns. The room feels smaller. The story has already started its work. Chapter 1. Tuning in the Dark. The archive room sits at the back of a quiet floor. A desk lamp throws a circle of light on a metal player. Cardboard sleeves line a shelf in even rows. The reel goes on. The leader tape slips through two fingers and settles. A small click. The motor hums. Headphones lift and cover the ears. The first minute is all pace and promise. The host settles the listener. The tone is warm and steady. The words come in clean lines with no hurry. The hour feels like a room with the door pulled in. The episode signals that the thrill will come from attention, not shock. The lamp shows dust in the air. The world outside the headphones falls away. A notebook lies open next to the deck. The pencil makes neat marks. Time codes, short notes, blank space for impressions. The goal of this session is simple. Listen once through. Then listen twice more and track what the body feels at key marks. Do not analyze mechanics yet. Stay with mood, voice, and pacing. Minute 3 raises the heart rate a notch. The scene does not shout. It narrows. The host gives the frame its boundaries and then steps back. The actors take over. The first exchange is close and ordinary. It does not announce danger. It invites you into a small circle. Your ear leans forward. The pencil notes this as a trust move. The episode gives control to the listener and asks for a first act of belief. The room around the listener is plain. A file fan turns on low. The chair gives a small sound. The headphones hold the sound field tight. A pattern forms. Short lines, brief pauses. Then a single cue sound placed right where the mind expects relief. The relief does not come. The pause stretches. The mind fills the gap. The pencil writes one line. The fear forms in the space, not the sound. At minute 6, the body marks a change. The neck muscles tense. The breath slows to match the pace of the scene. The voice work stays even. No one screams. No sudden spike. The dread grows from restraint. The pencil writes those words. Restraint builds trust. Trust allows the show to draw the listener to the edge with light pressure, not force. The investigator in the room keeps one eye on the clock. The other eye stays on posture and breath. For beats of silence land between two lines. That is a long time in audio. The pause is not empty. It is full of decisions the listener must make. Where are they? Who stands near a door? What waits on the other side? The show does not feed those answers. It lets the ear draft the image from a private store of fear. A note appears on the page. The style chooses intimacy over scale. The microphone placement feels near. The actors never push. The host returns at the edges to shape the path. The voice invites, never insists. The music arrives in held notes, not flourishes. None of this is a technical readout. It is a record of how the pacing asks the body to obey. At minute 10, a simple domestic action takes on weight. A door closes. The sound is not loud. It is definite. The next reply is soft. The mind moves fast to cover the gap. The listener recalls a hallway, a key, a drawn shade. The scene gives you only the hinge of the act. You supply the door, the hand, the face that does not show. The body reads the withheld picture as a threat. The notebook now holds a small map of the episode's early arc. Calm. Narrow. Withhold. Place a cue. Extend the pause. Invite the listener to risk a guess. Reward the guess with a line that does not settle the question. Repeat at a slightly tighter pace. This is not a trick. It is the honor system of fear. The show treats the listener as a partner who can keep up. A second pass begins. The tape rewinds. The lamp hums. This time the ear tracks rhythm. Lines fall in groups of three or four before a beat lands. The beats are not all the same length. They feel natural. The pauses lean longer when something unsaid hovers in the room. They shorten when the scene needs momentum. The host returns at measured points to reset the path. Each reset cuts a track through the fog, then steps away. The listener writes a note in the margin. The episode respects the night. It does not flood it. It uses thinking time on purpose. Many modern shows fill every inch. This one leaves room for the mind to move. The feeling is not empty. It is charged. The charge comes from the sense that something waits, and you might hear it if you stop breathing for a count. A third pass focuses on voice. The actors place stress in quiet ways. A word lands flat when a character tries to hide a worry. A small rise on a common phrase signals pressure. There is a pattern of stepping toward and then away. The voices never tell you what to fear. They keep living and let you find it. The pencil notes, again, restraint. The trust holds. There is a temptation to name the parts, to jump ahead and call out methods and famous hands. That is for later chapters. Today the work is to feel the timing and report what it does to the body. The record shows a steady build without big spikes. The mind stays busy. The ears stay alert for small changes. The hour asks to be taken slowly. The archive room gives a helpful control. There are no screens in view, no news feeds, no extra light. The mind has only the sound and the facts of the room. The chair, the desk, the shelves, the hum. The headset keeps the world close. This is the natural home field for radio horror. It thrives in a contained space with a single point of attention. The session adds a quick experiment. The headphones lift. The room speakers come on at a low level. The episode feels thinner this way. The sense of presence fades. The voices seem farther away. The door that closed before now sounds like a random household noise. The lesson is plain. Intimacy is a tool in this form. Headphones make the scene feel like it happens within arm's reach. The show expects that and writes for it. The notebook adds a list called listener jobs. Picture the room. Track who stands where. Decide if a sound means threat or normal life. Notice when a pause holds more weight than a line. Keep the thread of the host's guidance. None of these jobs require expertise. They require time, focus, and the willingness to sit in the dark without distraction. The show pays that attention back with a steady rise in pressure. Another test follows. The volume drops by a small amount. The fear does not drop with it. This is important. Loudness is not the core driver here. Clarity is. When everything is legible, the mind can make meaning from small moves. The show trusts that. The listener feels respected. The pencil notes that respect is part of the bond between episode and ear. The midway mark arrives. The body has adjusted to the pace. The sense of dread is now a background field. It does not shout. It hums. The notebook page holds a shape like a slow wave. The rise is even. The troughs are not empty. They carry a different kind of force. They let the listener store up questions. The act of waiting becomes the thrill. One more observation lands. The episode uses common life as its frame. Domestic spaces. Daily objects. Known relationships. This keeps the listener's attention close to home. It also tightens the room. The mind does not have to travel far to make sense of the cues. This speeds the bond between story and listener. It raises the stakes without big plot moves. The fear feels personal because the elements are familiar. The investigator writes a line in the side margin. The first act has taught the rules. The show will not spoon-feed images. It will not punish patience. It will make you do small tasks and then pay them off. It will allow quiet to hold meaning. It will let voices carry weight through truth, not tricks. The rest of the hour will stay inside those rules unless it wants to shake you. A brief pause for water. The reel keeps turning. The playback stays at normal speed. No pitch shift. No scrub. The aim is not to catch secrets. It is to experience the rhythm at human scale. The notes point to a small pattern that repeats. A neutral exchange. A small cue sound. A pause. A reply that refuses to resolve the cue. This repeats with slight variations. Each time the gap widens in the mind, even if the pause is the same length. The session ends the third pass and sits quiet for a minute. The archive room feels like a partner now. The stillness has trained the ear to value the next small sound. This is the same training the episode builds in the first act. The listener is now ready to live inside fine differences. That is where the episode wants the ear to live. That is where it will build pressure in the later scenes. Before stopping the tape, one last check. The mind runs a quick test. What did the episode avoid? It avoided clear labels on fear. It avoided a heavy hand. It avoided overexposure of any single cue. It avoided comedy in the wrong places. It avoided any need to show off. These choices keep the mood steady and let the dread grow like a slow tide. The headphones come off. The room sounds wide again. The fan, the chair, a hallway footstep. The reel coasts and stops. The smell of paper and tape sits in the air. The notes on the desk show a clean set of early findings. Pace and patience lead. Intimacy is the channel. Silence is not a hole. It is a tool. The listener's mind supplies the pictures. The episode trusts that mind to do the work with care. This was a listening chapter. No names. No studio lore. No deep method. Only the act of hearing and recording what it did to a body in a room. The next task will ask where this approach came from and why it fit its time. That will come later. For now, the record stands. Demon Lover sets its hook with voice, space, and time. It moves on a narrow path and invites the ear to walk it. The hour honors patience. The fear grows in the gaps. Chapter 2, The 70s Comeback. A photocopied memo lies on the desk. It speaks in careful network language about late nights, affiliate needs, and new audience habits. Television owns the dinner hour. The late slot is open ground. Stations ask for a show that fills time and keeps people near the radio at home. Drama is a risk. Drama with a steady host and a clear promise is a calculated risk the network can defend. The calendar on the wall reads January 6, 1974. The first broadcast goes out with a confident cadence. The pitch to affiliates had been simple. Give people an hour that feels like company in the dark. Keep it safe for the bedroom and the living room. Make it smart enough for adults and clear enough for teens who stay up late. Offer sponsors a name they can trust. Deliver it every night so habits form. E.g., Marshall steps to the task with a measured voice. He does not sell shock. He sells steadiness. He sets the frame and holds it. He introduces each hour and returns at the edges to keep the path true. His presence is the bridge between the network office and the household chair. A host with weight allows suspense to sit inside a respectable wrapper. That matters in this decade. Budget sheets from the period tell a sober story. Costs must be predictable. The show will use a tight studio, a rotating cast, and a fast production cycle. Scripts arrive on a steady schedule. Taping follows a weekly rhythm. Stations get reliable delivery. Advertisers see a clean slate with room for spots. The math is simple. If the hour keeps listeners through the breaks, it pays its way. Why bring back radio drama in the 1970s? The answer lives in the way people use their evenings. Not everyone wanted bright screens after the news. Some worked late and needed a soft landing. Some shared rooms and did not control the television. Some preferred a show that let them lie down and close their eyes. A calm voice and a slow build made that choice feel wise, not cheap. Network executives needed a concept that sounded modern without breaking the bank. Mystery theater did that by leaning on tone and cadence rather than spectacle. The show promised a return to form with present-day polish. It used a known brand in the network name and a known face in the host. It promised a clean hour that would not chase complaints. In a decade of hearings and scandals, reliability had value. The launch plan favored habit. Night after night creates memory. Memory turns into expectation. Expectation turns into routine. Affiliates could plug the same hour across many markets and promote it with a single line. Stations liked that because it made their boards simpler. Listeners liked that because they could count on the company at the same time each night. A small circle drove tone at the start. The brief was simple and strict. Stories should feel close to home. Threats should arise from ordinary life as often as from folklore. The moral frame should be clear. The host should enter like a guide, not a salesman. The opening music should signal mood, then step back. None of this is a craft breakdown. It is the policy backbone that shaped what listeners heard. Hyman Brown, a veteran builder of radio drama, pushed the revival forward with stubborn focus. He understood the two audiences the show needed. One group remembered old-time radio. The other had never known it. The hour had to satisfy both. That meant a clear structure and a constant pace. It also meant real care with content. The horror label could not scare off stations or sponsors. suspense and morality made the safer pitch. Internal notes from affiliates show the early nerves. Will young people care about a voice in the dark? Will urban audiences stay with a slow build? Will the show feel dated next to late-night television? The weekly ratings eased some fears. The letters and call-ins did the rest. People named the host and the hour when they wrote. They spoke about routine. They told the station when they listened. The show had entered real time in real homes. The decade context mattered. After years of public drama and public doubt, private rituals regained appeal. The energy crisis pushed some families closer to home at night. Inflation tightened budgets and nudged people toward low-cost habits. A free show that brought a steady hour of company fit the moment. The network did not need to say this out loud. The schedule said it for them. What about tone? Who decided it? The answer is not one person. It is a set of quiet choices that lined up. A mature host. A tight format. Stories that kept feet on the ground even when a script reached for the uncanny. A promise that the hour would end with a clear closing beat. Those choices gave stations a shield and gave the audience a ladder into the mood. They also kept the show from drifting toward camp. Syndication paths grew as tapes moved beyond the first wave. Some stations aired the hour live. Others shifted it to fit their market. The network supplied clean copy and a clock that made it easy to place ads. That clock did more than sell time. It taught writers and directors how to land beats against the breaks. Again, this is not the craft chapter. It is the fact that business needs shape the feel of the night. The marketing copy kept things modest. No wild claims. No fight with television. The promise was simple. Turn the dial at a set time, and a trusted voice will be there. That restraint worked in a culture with hard edges. The hour felt like a safe square where suspense could live without spilling over into everyday stress. The show did not try to be counterculture or rebellion. It tried to be solid. Community stations found their own uses for the format. Some aired it as a lead-in to local talk. Some used it as the capstone for a music block. In both cases, the hour did the same job. It held people through a transition point in the night. It kept the board clean. It gave tired ears a path toward sleep that did not feel noisy or empty. E.G. Marshall's persona helped with both coasts and middle markets. He could speak to a city apartment and a small town bedroom with equal weight. He sounded like the grown-up in the room without a lecture. That quality let the network place the show in a variety of time slots and still keep a single brand voice. Hosts matter in radio. In the 1970s, a single trusted voice could stitch a nation of rooms together. Letters from listeners tell a pattern. Couples listened together after the kids were in bed. Workers listened on late shifts. Students listened with lights low in dorm rooms. A few wrote about long drives on empty roads. The details change. The feeling does not. The hour gave rhythm to the night. The host gave it a face you could hear. Stations needed proof the revival was not a nostalgia stunt. The team supplied volume and consistency. Hundreds of episodes in a tidy window. Reliable segments that fit the clock. A roster of actors who could carry weekly parts without breaking the tone. The delivery showed discipline. That discipline kept affiliates on board. Why did the tone fit the decade? Because it respected fatigue. Not the cheap kind. The deep kind that follows long public strain. People wanted stories that carried risk without chaos. They wanted a voice that could keep panic out of the room while still letting the heart race. Mystery theater delivered that mix with a straight back and a steady hand. The team kept language plain. The moral edges stayed clear. The endings did not always tie a bow, but they did not sprawl. That choice made the show easier to place in homes with a range of ages. It also helped teachers and librarians who looked for material to support listening skills. The hour was not built for classrooms, but its clarity and tone made it usable there. The comeback also rode on tape culture. Collectors recorded off-air and shared reels. Stations archived for compliance and later ran them again. The network saw a second life in reruns because the format dated more slowly than visual shows. That second life fed the brand and trained future listeners who stumbled on a late broadcast years after the premiere. One more factor sits in the background. Radio keeps you in your life while you listen. You can fold laundry, drive, or lie still. The show counted on that. It did not ask you to stare. It asked you to attend. In a decade that pulled eyes in 100 directions, that felt like relief. The comeback worked because it knew what radio still did best. The chapter leaves craft for later. No sound design notes here. No breakdown of beats. Only the network logic, the host's steady role, the needs of affiliates, and the habits of people at home. The 1970s comeback was not magic. It was alignment, a clear hour, a calm guide, a nation of rooms ready to let the dark feel safe enough for stories. Chapter 3, Anatomy of a Fright. This hour earns fear by design. The script moves in short beats. Each beat shifts pressure a little. Each pause invites the ear to finish the picture. The shape is simple, a neutral moment, a cue, a pause, a reply which refuses to settle the cue. Repeat with slightly tighter spacing. The mind works to close gaps. Tension rises without noise. Dialogue runs on plain words. Sentences stay short. Lines land with clean ends. Actors place stress on single syllables, not whole phrases. Emotion lives in breath and timing, not in volume. Voices sit close to the mic, mouth sounds remain light but present. That closeness makes the room feel small. A whisper pulls the ear forward. A steady tone lets the ear lean in without fatigue. Silence is a tool, not a hole. Pauses arrive in two sizes. Micro rests, which last a heartbeat. Full breaths, which last long enough to count to two or three. Both carry weight. The short ones clip a thought. The long ones create a question. Foley supports this plan. Foley here means studio sound effects built by hand. Doors, keys, fabric, glass, a match, a chair leg on wood. Each sound is chosen for clarity over flourish. Rooms have room tone under every line. That low bed lets a new sound pop without extra gain. Footsteps run on a few patterns. Slow steps with soft heels suggest control. Fast steps with a flat shoe suggest panic. A single step with no follow-up suggests a presence which does not need movement to hold power. The ear knows these codes even without notes on paper. Object sounds stay exact. A bowl is ceramic, not metal. A latch clicks, not clanks. A new sound never overlaps speech unless overlap is the point. Mixed choices keep voices clear. Fear builds from meaning, not from a messy wall of noise. Music enters with restraint. The sting is brief. Four or five notes. Often on a single instrument with a spare echo. Harmony stays simple. No choir. No grand swell. The goal is to frame a mood, then step out. Leitmotif appears in a modest way. One figure for dread. One figure for doubt. Repeats come few and far between. Overuse would dull the edge. Distance preserves tension. When a figure returns, the body hears it as a signal without a label. The clock shapes scene order. Ad breaks arrive on a soft crest, not a crash. A question hangs in the air. The break holds the breath. Return lines reset location and pace in one or two sentences. No recap beyond one neat line. The plot does not idle. The ear stays engaged. Scripts work from small to large. A domestic space. An ordinary object. A voice with a private worry. No cold lectures on lore. The uncanny creeps in through normal life. Fear feels near because elements feel familiar. Pressure rises by subtraction. Fewer words. Longer rests. Fewer people in the room. The listener's job grows. Picture placement, proximity, intent. The show pays each effort with a tiny answer which raises a fresh question. The host controls the border. Entry sets scale. Exit sets a moral or leaves a void which feels earned. Presence stays steady. Voice never winks. Tone never mocks. The hour treats every fear as real inside the frame. Scene blocking on audio follows a clear map. Left, center, right. Near, mid, far. A door swings from a fixed side, so the ear learns the room. Once the map sits in memory, a new sound from an unmapped corner lands with force. Surprise feels fair, not cheap. Dynamics live in inches, not miles. A soft line moves to softer. A sting rises one notch above speech, not three. A single loud hit appears rare and precise. Overuse would teach the ear to brace. Restraint keeps shoulders low until a true turn arrives. Pronouns matter. He, she, you. Direct address pulls the ear into the scene. Second person use sits light and brief. One well placed, you can change a breathing pattern on the listener's side of the speaker. Props carry meaning. A key which sticks. A note which rustles. A ring which slides across a table. Each sound anchors a choice or a secret. The ear holds those anchors across scenes, which builds a private index of risk. Time cues are concrete. Morning light never appears on audio, so lines mention clocks, meals, or routines. Night holds car tires on wet roads, house plumbing, or a far train. These pieces give the mind tools to build a clear timeline without an on-air lecture. Flashbacks run narrow. A short sonic frame sets the shift. A filter, a thin bed of tape hiss, a quick musical marker. Then back to present with a clean cut. The effect is not nostalgia. It is memory under pressure. Phone scenes avoid long monologues. One side speaks. The other side breathes, shifts weight, or taps a pencil. The mix places the phone voice slightly filtered, not crushed. The human on the near side drives the emotion. Crowd sound stays sparse. A hallway with two voices carries more tension than a full lobby. Group chatter muddy stakes. The show prefers pairs. Two people. One risk between them. The ear follows edges with ease. Exposition hides in action. A line during a search. A note read under breath. A short instruction while a pot boils or a drawer sticks. Facts slide in without a stop sign. Momentum never freezes for backstory. Threat seldom speaks its name. The script offers signs. A pattern which repeats. A voice which dodges simple questions. A small lie which does not fit. Each sign is legible without heavy emphasis. Humor appears in thin lines and early. Relief vents pressure before mid-arc. Late humor risks collapse. The episode keeps late scenes clean and spare. Every sound points toward the finish. Microrhythms guide breath. Actors place a half beat before a key word. Musicians enter on the tail of a line, not on top. Editors clip endings tight, so no syllable drags. The result feels lean. The body follows that lean. Space makes fear personal. Headphones pull the listener inside a 3-foot circle. Sounds enter that circle with intent. The show writes for this distance. A whisper near the left ear. A latch on the right. A footfall straight ahead. The mind maps danger by angle and reach. Red herrings stay honest. A sound implies one source, which would make sense. A later line proves a different source, which also makes sense. The listener never feels cheated. The process trains the ear to weigh options, not to chase random noise. When a reveal lands, it lands low. Voices do not spike. Music does not swell. A plain line carries new truth. Silence follows. The body does the rest. This approach respects the intelligence of the audience and preserves replay value. The final third shifts tempo by a hair. Pauses trim down. Cues bunch closer. Words still stay simple. Scenes cut slightly earlier. Each cut leaves a breath for the ear to supply missing steps. Momentum rises without losing clarity. No gore. No lingering on harm. Dignity stays intact. Fear grows from stakes which feel human. Loss of trust. Loss of control. Loss of safe ground in a familiar room. Audio serves those stakes with care. The closing minute returns to first principles. Plain voice. Clean image. One sound which means more now than before. A door. A wind under wood. A hand on a coat. Music tags the mood and retires. The host lifts the listener back into ordinary life. All of this sits on a single promise. Attention equals reward. The show never punishes focus. It never piles noise over signal. It asks for stillness. It gives presence in return. This is the engine inside Demon Lover. Clear beats. True pauses. Precise sounds. Honest signals. A steady guide. A room which grows smaller by design. The ear meets the hour halfway and goes home with a chill which lingers. Chapter 4. The World Around the Speaker. Night settled early in the mid to late 1970s. Kitchen lights clicked off. Bedrooms kept one lamp on low. A bedside radio sat within reach. The last weather report gave way to voices that felt safe to hear in the dark. Work shaped the clock. Factory shifts rolled past midnight. Nurses walked bright halls and took breaks near small radios. Long-haul drivers steered through empty miles and kept one ear on talk and music. A steady voice at a set hour helped the night feel ordered. Money worries lived in many homes. Prices rose. Pay felt thin. Families cut back on outings and stayed in more. A free hour with a calm host and a slow build fit that mood and fit those budgets. Domestic life set the stage for fear that stayed close to the skin. Doors, keys, hallway lights, water in the pipes. These were not props from a far place. They were the tools of every night. When a story used them with care, the risk felt personal. Pop culture brought the uncanny into the living room. Paperbacks with haunted houses stacked on end tables. Big films about possession filled headlines. Talk shows took callers who wanted to describe dreams, cards, and signs. The line between faith, folklore, and entertainment blurred for a while. Radio sat in the middle of that mix. It did not need a big effect to feel near. It needed a pause, a breath, a small sound in a mapped room. The ear made the rest. In that space, temptation and dread could live without gore or spectacle. Family roles shifted. More households ran on two incomes. Care routines changed. Some children spent the last hour of afternoon alone until dinner time. After bedtime, parents wanted quiet company that would not wake anyone. A measured hour of suspense matched that need. Workplace stress leaked into bedrooms. Layoff rumors moved through break rooms. Overtime helped but wore people down. Stories about control, trust, and unseen pressure sounded familiar. A show that built fear from an ordinary room did not have to explain very much. Faith communities watched the same trends. Pastors warned about dark forces in new forms. Others called for calm and patience. People listened to sermons in the morning and stories at night. The moral frame of the host made that mix feel acceptable. The hour did not mock belief or sell it. It let the listener place the weight. Bedrooms carried small rituals. A glass of water on a table. A book open to a marked page. A radio dial set one notch above low. Partners listened together without eye contact. The sound did the standing. The feelings moved in small steps. Apartments and dorm rooms needed quiet entertainment. A voice in the dark made thin walls feel less thin. The show asked for attention but not a stare. Listeners could lie down and let the room fade while the story pulled focus to the ear. Night workers used the same tool. A radio on a desk in a hospital station. A small set on a shelf near a loading dock. Volume set to keep the job safe. The hour paced time without calling too much attention to itself. Headlines kept the public keyed up. Scandals, shortages, and crime reports stacked over years. People did not want more chaos. They wanted controlled risk with a clean path back to ordinary life. The host's steady tone promised that path. Occult talk drew crowds and critics. Cards, boards, and books moved through stores. Skeptics pushed back. Radio could hold both notes. It framed strangeness as a question, then pressed on method and motive. It let listeners sit with puzzle and doubt, which matched the era. The home itself became a stage for unease. Locks felt necessary. Windows stayed shut. A knock at the wrong hour meant a choice. Stories that set the uncanny inside that frame felt true to many homes. They did not need ancient ruins. They needed a hallway and a phone. That phone mattered. A ring at night pulled everyone upright. A voice at the other end could bring comfort or a chill. Audio used the ring and the pause before hello to hold the breath. People knew that feeling from real life. Retail sold new sound in small boxes. Transistor sets, clock radios, cassette players. Portability helped the form reach kitchens, garages, and bedrooms. The show met people wherever a plug or a battery could live for an hour. Rooms carried different rules by age. Teens liked the thrill of staying up past lights out. Parents wanted a story that would not break trust. The hour threaded that gap with clarity and restraint. It promised an ending that would leave the room quiet enough for sleep. Work, family, and faith met at the edge of that hour. Control at work felt uncertain. Boundaries at home felt fragile. Belief felt both needed and contested. A story about attention, pressure, and temptation fit that triangle. It asked what holds when the room goes quiet. Listeners who wrote letters often mentioned place and time. After dishes, before bed, on break, in the car outside an overnight shift. The ritual counted as much as the story. The calm of the host made the ritual hold. Fear in that context did not need a monster with a clear face. It needed a voice that dodged simple questions. It needed objects that carried private meaning. It needed silence that asked the listener to decide what was safe. Those tools matched nightly life. The cultural wind pulled two ways. One current chased mystery and signs. The other demanded proof and order. The hour sat on the line between them. It gave the uncanny room to breathe. It gave reason its turn at the end. Routines made that balance work. Listeners knew when the hour started and ended. The clock made a promise. The story could shake the room, but would return it to steady before the host said goodnight. Trust grew from that consistency. This context did more than set mood. It shaped choices on the page and in the studio. Stories leaned on common rooms. Themes reached for loyalty, deceit, and control. Sound favored close mics and clean cues. The show lived inside the habits of the audience. So did Demon Lover mirror anxieties of work, family, or faith. The evidence points to yes in quiet ways. It pressed on control inside intimate spaces. It weighed trust against desire. It let moral language hover near the edge without preaching. The night gave it cover, and the radio gave it reach. Chapter 5, Voices Behind the Curtain. A script sits under the lamp. Page numbers in pencil. Cue lines in the margin. The clock grid runs down the left in tidy boxes. Writers built to that grid. Act openings carried a clear image in the first 10 seconds. Exposition hid inside plain action. Returns from breaks gave one neat line to reset time and place. Drafts moved fast. A final marked copy carried SFX, music, and pause counts. Dialogue stayed short. Beats turned on everyday objects that would read clean on air. The room called a table read. Chairs in a half circle. Pencils ready. The director listened for breath and overlap. Notes landed in three words at a time. Cut. Hold. Try again. Actors were regulars. Stage trained. They could bring shape at a low volume. They knew where the mic sat and how to move an inch without losing presence. Mic plots marked near, mid, and far. A door lived at a fixed angle. A phone sat to the right. Once the map held, a new sound from an unmapped corner had weight. The director watched the stopwatch. Beats had to land before the ad marker. If a pause ran long, a later pause paid it back. Timing tied art to business. Foley stood behind glass. Wood blocks. A key ring. A chair on a short strip of floor. Each prop stayed true to its material. Nothing cartooned. Nothing sloshed over the line. Music cues lived on index cards. For notes for doubt. A held tone for dread. Entries fell under voice tales, then cut clean. The tail of a cue never masked a word. Pickups handled the rough edges. A line with a soft consonant. A footstep that crowded a syllable. The engineer marked the splice with a sliver of leader and moved on. The host tracked in a separate window. Open bridge close. The voice set scale. It offered a moral frame without a sermon. It promised order at the edge of fear. Writers wrote to that promise. Temptation and cost. Choice and consequence. The last scene left air for the host to land the hour. The script did not step on that space. Standards shaped content. No gore. No cruelty for shock. No cheap laugh in the final third. The fear lived in control, trust, and small lies that felt true. Rehearsal favored pacing over flourish. A swell of feeling had to fit the meter of the scene. Actors learned to let silence carry work. The director cut lines that repeated the same move. Production days ran tight. 2 or 3 hours to secure an act. Pages turned fast. A coffee break doubled as a line check. The clock pushed clarity. Casting kept voices distinct. A low register for steady ground. A lighter tone for strain. A warm middle for the confidant who might not be safe. Listeners could track parts by ear. Engineers guarded legibility. Consonants needed space. Sibilance stayed under control. Peak sat one notch above speech. The mix kept the human center clear. Writers learned the clock like muscle memory. First turn by minute 8. Midpoint push by minute 25. A hinge near the last break. The finish left the image plain and strong. Directors kept the room small. No crowd scenes unless the story required two lines of texture. Pairs carried most risk. Two people in a room with a decision between them. The host's closing words arrived last in the day. One take if possible. A second if tone needed to soften. The aim was steady company, not a scold. Authorship showed in restraint. The hour sounded like one voice because the rules held. Each hand added craft within that frame. No one reached past the border the host set. How much did authorship shape Demon Lover? A lot in quiet ways. The writer's grid, the director's clock, the actor's inches at the mic, and the host's calm spine met on tape. The piece felt inevitable because each part stayed true to the same narrow path. Chapter 6, Reception Memory Afterlife. Stations logged the hour in clean blocks. Program grids showed a late slot with a steady title. Engineers wrote brief notes in margin lines. Signal strength. Spot timings. A caller count if the board lit up after the close. Listener letters arrived in careful script. Some thanked the host for company during long nights. Some named a single scene that stayed with them for days. A few asked for copies. Station staff filed what they could and read the rest in break rooms. Call-ins followed a pattern. People shared where they listened. A kitchen table. A guard booth. A dorm bed with the lights low. The details shifted by town and age. The feeling stayed stable. The hour made the dark feel organized. Newspaper blurbs remarked on the return of drama to radio. Writers noted the host's calm and the tight format. Praise leaned on tone more than plot. The show read as respectable and steady in a noisy decade. Affiliates watched the clock and the board. If phones stayed quiet during the hour, that counted as success. If they rang after the close with short compliments, that counted as proof of reach. Program directors kept the slot. Reruns arrived quickly. The format allowed it. Episodes dated slowly because sound does not age on wardrobe or hair. Stations filled holidays, storms, and schedule gaps with clean copy from the archive. Listeners accepted the encore. Some did not notice. That is the sign of a form built on mood rather than news. Home tapers built a second life. Cassette decks sat under radios and caught the air with a click. Labels carried dates and episode titles when known. People traded copies by mail. A few formed small circles that shared lists. The practice was casual and patient. Libraries and schools used selected hours to teach listening. Students learned to track a scene without pictures. Teachers pointed to pauses and cues. The host's clarity helped. The moral frame made the choice easy in mixed-age spaces. Collectors moved tapes to new formats over time. The motive was preservation. Heat and dust do not care about a label. Copies kept the sound alive when originals failed. The work was quiet and often private. It built a path for later listeners to find the hour. What kept Demon Lover in the rotation was not a single twist. It was the way the episode used attention. The tone stayed even. The fear arose from ordinary rooms. The ending left a clean space for the host to step in and settle the night. That balance played well in rerun and in memory. Families passed the habit on. A parent who once lay awake with a bedside radio later played old recordings in a living room. Children listened on the floor and learned how to hear a room through sound only. Years later, they searched for the same cadence and set their own rituals around it. Night workers wrote about relief. A slow hour with clear lines helped them reset after busy shifts. Nurses and drivers named the voice that closed the hour. They did not talk about plot in detail. They talked about rhythm and about an ending that let them breathe. College listeners used the hour as a bond. Small groups met in lounges and turned the volume low. People who did not share classes shared a time and a voice. The act of listening together replaced the need for commentary. The show did not require debate. It required stillness. Stations sometimes built local promotions around the hour. Simple tags invited listeners to make the slot a habit. Some ran short contests that asked for a favorite moment. Winners named the host and a single sound rather than a storyline. A door. A phone ring. A pause that felt like a held breath. Press features on the revival era highlighted craft and speed. When the episode list grew large, reporters leaned on volume as proof of success. The story of the comeback became part of the way people remembered the sound. Reliability turned into reputation. A smaller community formed around episode guides. Fans kept notebooks with titles, casts, and quick impressions. These were not official logs. They were personal records that helped people find an hour they wanted to hear again. Demon Lover often drew a star in margins. The reason wrote itself. Tone. Restraint. Aftertaste. In retirement homes and hospitals, staff used the hour for quiet time. The form gave company without glare. People who could not track television found it easier to follow voices and simple cues. The closing words acted like a gentle signal that night routines could begin. International listeners tuned in on clear nights when signals carried far. Others heard copies from friends and relatives. The form traveled well because it asked for the same skills everywhere. Listen closely. Picture a room. Decide what a small sound means. Critics later pointed to the show as proof that radio can hold drama in any decade. They cited the steady host and the narrow focus. They noted that the very limits of the medium became its strength. When you cannot show, you must place each sound with care. Some episodes faded. Others stayed near the surface of conversation. Demon Lover stayed. It did not depend on a topical hook. It depended on private unease. That kind of unease does not expire. A hallway remains a hallway. A half-truth remains a half-truth. Archive volunteers kept track of copies held by stations, universities, and private hands. The work was slow and careful. Condition notes, source notes, and simple chain of custody lines built trust. Clean transfers owed a debt to that discipline. Rebroadcasts in later years reintroduced the hour to people who had never met the host. The cadence still worked. The room still felt small. A few lines dated in language, but the engine held. The story moved on attention and choice, not on fashion. Merchandise was rare and simple. Program listings, small ads, and occasional mailers carried the name. The lack of clutter helped the show live in memory as a sound rather than a logo. People remembered a voice more than a graphic. Clubs and meetups formed around old radio. Members brought real boxes and cassettes in tote bags. They played short scenes and compared notes on mix and mic. New listeners learned how to hear the difference between a clean transfer and a worn tape. The respect for the form passed from hand to hand. Writers and directors in later decades named the hour when asked about influences. They spoke about patience and trust. They mentioned the lesson that a pause can carry more weight than a loud cue. The episode served as a reference point for tone and economy. Households that kept recordings noted a pattern in how they played them. Evenings. Low light. Volume set to a level that kept consonants clear. The setting echoed the original use. The ritual seemed to be part of what made the memory last. A few controversies stirred around content in specific markets. Stations handled them with schedule shifts and careful notes. The brand survived because the host's frame remained steady and humane. The show promised suspense within a moral boundary and generally kept that promise. Educators used the episode to teach scene construction with sound. Students marked where each cue fell and how long each pause lasted. They learned how a room map lets a surprise feel fair. They heard how an ending can be plain and still satisfy. Why this one episode? Because it delivers a full experience with minimal parts. A clear voice. A domestic space. A single pattern of cue and reply. A moral edge that does not preach. The result leaves a trace in the body. People remember how they breathed while it played. In private journals, some listeners recorded nights when a hard day required a calm finish. They named the hour as a tool, not a distraction, a way to sit still and let the mind land. The memory tied to that feeling held firm. Stations kept logs for compliance and proof of performance. Those same logs now serve as breadcrumbs for historians who want to place dates and times. They also show how many markets trusted the slot enough to let it run long stretches without change. Collectors maintain index cards with transfer dates and tape conditions. Notes mention oxide shed, splice repairs, and exact running times. The care reads like a quiet oath to keep the hour legible for someone else later. The afterlife of a sound show depends on attention in two eras. The first belongs to the broadcast and the ritual it creates. The second belongs to the people who carry it forward when schedules change. Demon Lover had both. It built a habit in its time. It found caretakers after. What remains is a shared sense that the hour did its work with respect. It asked for focus and gave a full return. It trusted a listener to live inside small sounds. It left room for sleep after the last line. That kind of trust keeps a story in motion long after the reel stops. Chapter 7. From Airwaves to Earbuds. A phone rests on a desk. Earbuds coil beside it. The room is quiet. The same quiet a bedside radio once needed. The medium changed. The rules that worked still work. The first rule is trust. A steady host voice builds a frame the audience believes. The message is simple. This hour will not waste attention. Mystery theater proved that night after night. Modern shows keep that bond when the voice stays clear, calm, and present. Restraint still carries weight. Short lines. Clean beats. Pauses placed with care. Loud sound is easy to add and hard to justify. Silence asks the ear to lean in. The 70s team used that fact like a tool. Today the tool remains sharp. Clarity beats scale. A single key on wood tells more truth than a stack of layers. Foley that matches material wins. Doors sound like doors. Paper sounds like paper. The ear decides what matters when the mix leaves room. Domestic stakes travel well. A hallway at night. A voice that dodges simple questions. A choice that changes trust inside a home. These elements did not age out with tape. They live in phones and cars as well as they lived in bedrooms and kitchens. Clock sense matters in on-demand audio too. The show's ad breaks taught writers to land on a soft crest. A question hangs. A breath holds. Then the hour returns and resets clean. Modern chapters and mid-rolls benefit from the same rhythm. The ear likes a hinge it can feel. What should change? File practice and loudness first. A clean master wins over a hot master. Targets vary by platform. Healthy headroom keeps consonants legible on small speakers. Mono checks prevent vanishing voices. Stereo pans stay gentle so earbuds do not tire the listener. Transcripts help more than search. They aid memory and study. They serve people who cannot or do not want to listen at a given moment. Mystery theater wrote for the ear. A modern team can write for both ear and eye without breaking tone. Credits and sourcing should surface with care. A short spoken line names the people who built the work. Notes hold the rest. That honors labor and gives researchers a trail. It also discourages rumor. The revival era lived on habit and trust. Documentation keeps that habit honest. Dynamic ad systems require tone control. Inserted spots should match the hour's volume and pace. The 70s clock shaped beats around known breaks. Modern tools can do the same if the team sets limits. Sudden jumps undo mood. Caps on level and length protect the field. Music cues benefit from the old rule. Less is more, for notes can mark doubt. A held tone can carry dread. The cue exits before a word begins. The tail does not smear the line. Restraint keeps music from doing the job of story. Room mapping still helps a reveal feel fair. The left wall holds a door. The right wall holds a phone. The center holds the couch. The audience holds that map in memory. A new sound that breaks the pattern lands with force. The listener feels the room move underfoot. Writers can borrow the basic pattern and keep it fresh. A neutral moment. A cue. A pause. A reply that refuses to settle the cue. Repeat with a tighter gap. The mind closes each space and stores a question. Pressure rises even when words stay plain. Performance is inches, not yards. The mic sits close. Actors find the line ending. They let breath carry meaning. They avoid the reach for volume that flattens shape. The 70s cast had stage habits, but radio instincts. The best modern voices learn the same control. Editing follows a simple chain. Cut air that drags. Protect air that holds meaning. Keep tails clean. Remove extra mouth clicks only when they distract. Leave human grain. The listener trusts a voice that sounds like a person in a room. Ethical listening and archiving need clear lines. Fair use allows brief reference, not long lifts. Quotes stay short. Attributions stay present. Claims about living people require care and sources. Mystery theater wore a moral frame for a reason. Modern shows can carry the same respect. Preservation is a second life. Keep a lossless master. 48 kHz at 24 bits serves most needs. Store checksums. Log dates, sources, and mix choices. Keep at least two backups in different places. Write one plain text note that explains the folder to a stranger in 10 years. Transfers from old media should record what was done. Noise reduction and EQ leave fingerprints. A note that lists settings prevents guesswork later. Clean does not mean sterile. The aim is legibility, not a scrubbed surface. Private collectors still matter. Many copies live in homes and small groups. A friendly process for donations helps material survive. A receipt that lists condition and date builds trust. A scan of paper labels prevents loss of detail. Quiet work saves sound. Teaching with audio benefits from simple drills. Map a room from left to right. Mark every pause longer than a breath. Play a scene on speakers, then on headphones, then in a car. Listen for what changes and what holds. Students who do this once hear every show differently. Accessibility goes beyond transcripts. Clear diction helps second language listeners. Avoid constant whisper if the scene does not require it. Content notes at the top keep people safe who bring their own history to a story. None of this dulls drama. It widens the door. Mobile habits change pacing choices. Many listeners take in shows during short windows. Writers can build sections that land in 5 to 8 minutes without feeling chopped. The old hour taught how to ride a clock. The same skill helps now. Distribution tools tempt with loud tricks. Hard swells and sudden hits win a second on a graph. They lose a body over time. The 70s team chose patience and won replay value. Modern shows win the same way. Attention repays attention. Credit the crew out loud. Voice actors. Editors. Foley. Music. Research. The revival era filed this in logs and office notes. Today, a short spoken role gives faces to the work and keeps a record people can cite. It also signals standard to peers. Language can keep the calm spine and still sound current. Short verbs. Clear nouns. No filler. Avoid jargon unless the scene earns it. When jargon appears, define it once in plain speech and move on. The old scripts did this under pressure. The method still works. On-set safety for fear stories means emotional care. Warn actors about themes. Give a pause after hard scenes. Keep a person in the room who can check in. The broadcast era did not always hold this line. Modern teams can. Music licensing and rights sit under every decision. Clear agreements prevent hard edits later. Archival use improves when contracts travel with files. A folder that holds the text of grants and permissions saves time and reduces risk. Young producers who study Demon Lover learn one central lesson. The show trusted the audience. It did not chase. It did not shout. It built a path and walked it at a human pace. Many current hits share that DNA even when they use new gear and new formats. A simple exercise places the past beside the present. Take a scene that rests on a door and a pause. Record it with one mic in a small room. Then record it with layers and wide stereo in a large room. Play both on earbuds at low volume. The first version will likely hold better. The ear values shape over spread. Community builds archive. Listeners who save files, label them, and hand them forward keep history alive. Stations and schools that host clean copies give future makers a baseline. The revival era rode on habit and care. The afterlife rides on the same. Global reach changes the night. A show that once aired at one time in one place now lands at all hours across time zones. The ritual shifts from a shared clock to a shared pattern. Quiet. Attention. A voice that guides. A space that narrows. The core remains. What to keep. The intimate mic. The honest pause. The map of a small room. The moral frame that respects dignity. The promise that the hour will return the listener to steady ground. What to update. File practice. Access. Credits. ToneSafe add tools. Clear notes on process. Care for people in the room. The distance from airwaves to earbuds is short when a show leads with attention and care. The old hour still teaches that lesson. The phone on the desk holds the same quiet the radio once held. A voice enters the room. The room grows smaller. The story begins.